Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Jenny Hubby, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with the lovely Jenny Hubby.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Bruce.
Welcome back to the United States.
Thank you. It's good to be home.
Yeah, we'll have to do a show on all your sights and things that you saw. And strangely enough, my office is like five doors down from Jenny's travel agent, so I'm getting a lot of vicarious pleasure on, from him from your accountant. So it's another reason to keep going to work.
Well, yeah, and you and I will have to compare notes on Switzerland sometime.
Exactly.
Like in August when it's real hot here.
Exactly. So, well, great. I'm glad you're back, and we've missed you, but somehow we've managed to plod along.
Well, I'm sure.
And in that vein, we're more than plodding along today, folks. We got a couple of great special guests with us here on the Concierge Coaches Show. Again, the show, we talk a lot about different types of coaching: recovery coaching, executive coaching, life coaching, spiritual coaching, any type of coaching. And yes, folks, we found another form of coaching that we have never talked about on this show, and it's something that's near and dear to my heart as well, is coaching families, clients, attorneys, and even judges, coaching people about the prospect of going to federal prison, what that means. When you're going to federal prison, what that process is, why you need to have a coach or a consultant, but certainly a coach early in the process. And we'll just kind of go through the various stages of the process. These fellows will go through the process, and I'm sure we're going to run out of time before we can get to it. So without further ado, we have Ralph Miller and Jose Santana. Good afternoon, fellas.
Welcome, Bruce. Thank you.
All right. So good to see you. So tell us a little bit about both your backgrounds. I'll start with you, Ralph. Tell our listeners a thumbnail sketch about your background and all the experience you had in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and talk about your role in this new coaching business, Federal Prison Authority.
All right. Thank you. I just recently retired in September of last year after 24 years in the Bureau of Prisons. 23 of those years I spent in correctional programs, which means assisting inmates with their program needs, program goals, and release requirements, pre-release needs. But I was a case manager, a unit manager, and most importantly, my last 11 years in the Bureau of Prisons, I worked at the Designations and Sentence Computation Center in Grand Prairie, Texas, as a senior designator. I was responsible for reviewing all new inmates coming into the Bureau of Prisons and selecting an appropriate facility based upon a variety of factors, their security needs, their mental health, their physical needs, if there's any gang activity, if they're along those lines. And we also worked with the prisons if an inmate incurred disciplinary reports and required any type of transfer, and even good types of transfer. A lot of times inmates are far from home, and the Bureau has certain rules on when they can be transferred closer to home. We did transfers for programming needs. So I've encompassed everything when it comes to working with the inmates and what they deal with on a daily basis, their family deals with on a daily basis, and to assist them ultimately to release to the community and be a productive member of society.
That's a great overview. Also, Ralph, talk a little bit about your experience. I know you have experience with RDAP, RDAP placement, and also sex offender classification and placement. Talk a little bit about those areas as well.
Certainly. For about 5 years at the DSCC, I was the sex offender designator. That was my specialty. It's very tricky when it comes to the sex offenders, because the Bureau's rules on classifications of an inmate is very, very gray. And anybody from the public can go onto their website and read the program statement that the Bureau of Prisons uses to classify inmates. But it is very, very vague. And throughout the years, we've developed what it takes for an inmate to be classified a certain way based upon certain crimes. So I specialized in those types of offenders and spoke to many judges, spoke to many attorneys, given them insight on what it takes to get into the Bureau of Prison sex offender treatment programs, the different types of sex offender treatment programs. And also, I did do quite a few RDAP transfers. I didn't review the individuals to determine if they were eligible for the program. That's a different part of the DSCC. But once they were determined appropriate, we did transfers to a facility, hopefully closer to home, that gave them the best opportunity to secure as much early release that's possible if they were eligible for the early release. And I also, just to throw it in there, I was also an instructor at the National Corrections Academy on the classification of inmates. So that's my expertise area, is the classification of inmates.
Great. And that is so instructive, because a lot of times, and we'll get to Jose in a second, but you know, a lot of times when people are arrested and go through, they're indicted, and then these things get written up. The thing about the federal system is that you may be doing time in another state. Let's say if you're arrested in Southern California, and you think that you're going to go to Terminal Island. Well, that's just not the case, right? Out there in Los Angeles, you may be going somewhere north, or even to another state. Same thing in Texas, right? You might be going to Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, a plethora of different places, and it could jeopardize your ability to get visits. It could jeopardize your ability to possibly, you know, that first designation, you couldn't get the treatment that you really needed. And lastly, you may be placed in a yard that might be a little dangerous, you know, depending on your circumstances. If you were a rat or a cooperator or sex offender or otherwise an affiliate of some nefarious group. So yeah, as you can tell, Ralph has a background in just about the whole shebang. Jose, how's it going, man?
Good, good. How are you, Bruce?
You're a reputable man. You're a reputable businessman. You're a reputable man. How's it going? That's how we have a little joke.
Great.
So talk a little bit about now. Jose has an awesome background as well. Go ahead and break all that down to our listeners about how you started, and then what led you wanting to come into a coaching thing like Federal Prison Authority.
Well, you know, good afternoon, everybody. I started my career back in 1988 in the legal division in Puerto Rico, Department of Corrections. I graduated as a Juris Doctor, attorney, and so I worked at the Department of Corrections for 3.5 years in Puerto Rico. I was the Director of Rules and Regulations there, and I was the Discipline Hearing Officer for the Department of Corrections. Then they decided to build a prison, federal prison in Puerto Rico, and I applied there, and I got selected back in 1991. Started my career as a legal technician there, and then went on to be a case manager, Puerto Rico case manager coordinator in Puerto Rico, until 1996 that I transferred to Beaumont, Texas, and became a unit manager there for 4.5 years, and Federal Correctional Complex in Beaumont, Texas, which at that time was one of the biggest complex in the Federal Bureau of Prisons in the United States. I was there for 4.5 years. Then I transferred to the regional office of the South Central of the United States, which is the South Central Regional Office in Dallas, Texas. I became a regional designations administrator there, which no longer are in existence. They're all the designators. That's what Ralph used to do at the DSEC. So in 2004, in 2002, I was promoted to the Correctional Programs Administrator with oversight of all the correctional programs in the South Central part of the United States. And then back in 2007, I was transferred to Puerto Rico, the Federal Detention Center there, the Metropolitan Detention in Guaynabo, Puerto Rico, as an associate warden. There 2.5 years as an associate warden, and then I was transferred in 2010, relocated, and assumed the position of the chief of the Designation and Census Computation Center for the whole Federal Bureau of Prisons, which is called the DSEC. And I was there for 7.5 years, just recently retired in December of this, of last year, 2017. The Census Computation Center, the DSEC, has oversight of all the designations, transfers, population management, and computations, classifications of all inmates that are sentenced in a federal court in the United States.
Man, that is that's a handful. So both you guys have that DSCC experience, which is clutch. That Designation and Sentence Computation Center is literally the backbone and the spinal cord to every inmate's existence in terms of where they're going, how they're getting there, when they're coming and going. So, no, I think that's really good. So basically, when somebody is arrested for a federal crime, you know, I know you guys encourage the attorneys and the client to enlist and sign on very quickly to the services because, you know, just a lot of these clients don't know that certainly the more points they have, the more dangerous or secure, you know, more secure the facility. And then there's things about their situation that can get reduced points. But first, before we go into that, I guess I'm sure Jenny is sitting there spinning her head going, what the hell did they just say?
Oh, you read my mind.
I work with them. I work with these guys as well. So, Jenny, what questions do you have at this point?
Wow. Well, first of all, it's great to meet both of you virtually anyway and visit with you. And I really appreciate the work that y'all do. Like I've always appreciated the work that Bruce does. And I know it's highly, highly specialized. So I think what I understand, just correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys were involved in the determination of where someone spent their time and whether they moved to another facility and for what reasons. Is that like civilian talk for what you did?
That's very accurate. Yeah.
Very yes. Simple, but okay. And there's a point system based on the crime or crimes, and then a point system for how they behaved while they were doing their time also?
Yes, there's two parts to the classification. If the Designations and Sentence Computation Center, with a new inmate coming into prison, we're only going to be dealing with, we'll just say, the top half. And the things that determine somebody's points, if I can remember most of them off the top of my head, and they're the severity of his offense, does he have a history of violence, is there a history of escape, detainers or pending charges that have not been resolved or unknown, drug and alcohol abuse, educational level. All of those things go into this little computer program, and when it's done, it shoots out a number, and it says, okay, this is how many points this offender has, and then based upon the points, they're designated to a security level, minimum, low, medium,
okay,
or high.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
And then once they're in a prison, then all transfers are initiated by the staff at the facility. We don't initiate the transfers there. They'll send them to us. I'm still talking like I work there. They'll send them to the DSCC, and the DSCC will determine if the transfer is appropriate. But while they're in prison, they can do things to lower or raise their points, which are, mm-hmm. Good or bad. If you get a lot of incident reports, your points can go up. If you stay out of trouble, your points can go down. So there's two different ways it can be done with the custody and then the security. But yes, ultimately it's just points. It all comes down to how many points the individual has.
Okay. Well, fortunately, I don't have a lot of experience in this area personally, except that I sponsored in AA, I sponsored a woman that went to Gatesville, the women's, I don't know if it's a jail or a prison there, and had 2 years, and then she did 10 months, and sadly got back out, started drinking again, and died at 52 years old of early onset dementia, not otherwise specified. I think that's how Bruce knows the diagnoses better than me, but basically alcohol-induced dementia.
Wow.
Yeah. Really sad. So I'm a little familiar with it. I just, again, I know it's not easy work, and it really takes special people to do this kind of work and help people rehabilitate themselves. I know that's not all of your job, but obviously if you're coaching, that's part of your mission.
Man.
Go ahead, Ralph.
No, I agree with her 100%. Everything she said is accurate, and that's what, when you worked in the prison, in the correctional program side of it, that was your goal. I mean, you're still there to protect society, to keep the offenders behind the fence, but while you were working there, your goal is to assist the offenders with programming, gain work skills, and ultimately mm-hmm. be able to, release to the community with a viable release plan to enhance the probability of success to not reoffend and end up back in prison again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'll say I've got two other associates I just remembered that were arrested for drunk driving, and both of them killed someone driving. And so they did both separately. They're just people that I happen to know in the field. Both of them did their time. And one of them is now a therapist, which is a miracle. He totally rehabilitated himself. And he now has a transitional living home for young men to help them recover and rehabilitate themselves and rebuild their lives. And the young lady is now married and has a child, and she helps people in recovery also for her profession. So it's those are some success stories I know you love to hear.
Yeah, that would be the best if everybody was a success story.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. So one of the things we do, or y'all do, and we do, is really, there's a lot of people in the prison coaching sphere space that are ex-convicts, okay? Mm-hmm. And while there's nothing wrong with being an ex-convict, it's just that an ex-convict really has a limited scope and mm-hmm. knowledge of the inner workings of the Federal Bureau of Prisons. Now, they may understand a whole lot. Don't get me wrong. They can teach prison survival programs. They can pretty much attest to commissary and how to avoid sperm babies in the shower or whatever.
Oh. Oh, man.
Family program. It's a family program. Anyway, so, you know, but they just don't know the intricacies. So, for instance, Jose, you're still there?
I'm here.
So, Jose, kind of walk us, for instance, there was a gentleman who retained our services, and, you know, we completely assisted this gentleman getting designated to an institution of his dreams so he could get closer to his family. But yet, because the letter that he received from the marshals or the BOP didn't have the words, you know, Sierra Charlie Papa, you know, he freaked out. So tell our listeners how you were able to successfully coach that guy, because I got so mad after explaining to him about 3 or 4 times. So kind of tell our listeners how you were able to partner with the client and let, you know, ally his fears. he was indeed going to. Go ahead.
We explained that he was looking for specific wording on that letter, and it did not happen because federal prisons are named by Congress. It takes an act of Congress to name a federal prison, literally. So there are prisons in the Bureau of Prisons that have an adjacent satellite camp. So the main prison is the name, the official name. The satellite camp is just a satellite operation of the main facility. So this inmate, this individual, he's not an inmate yet. He'll voluntarily surrender to the prison in the near future. But he wanted the letter to specifically indicate that he was going to the satellite camp and not to the federal correctional institution. And that was not going to happen because the name of the prison was the main facility.
Yeah.
And he didn't understand that. So he was very stressed out. I mean, individuals that are going to prison are very stressed out trying to handle the last minute things with their life and their family life, organizing their family life and leaving everything straight so they could surrender and serve their prison term.
Mm.
But it's interesting what Bruce is saying because, you know, there are a lot of firms out there, consulting firms, that do not have, I know this for a fact, that do not have the expertise that Mr. Ralph Miller has, that Mr. Bruce Cameron has, or myself. Because, for instance, we worked in the Centralized Designation and Sentence Computation Center, which has been a game changer for the Bureau of Prisons doing designations, placement of inmates, and computations, calculating inmate sentences. So there is the unknown of how the DSCC operates, and Ralph brings that expertise. Mr. Cameron knows about that expertise because he's dealt with it and worked in the regional office also next to the DSCC. And myself, which was the chief for the past 7.5 years, just retired from there. So a lot of these firms do not know and can't coach appropriately families or the rest of the criminal justice components that interact with the Bureau of Prisons.
Yeah, man, just think of, you know, think of a hand. Our knowledge is a hand, and you know what I mean? I mean, I think, you know, Ralph's the thumb, gets utility. Jose's the first or second finger, and I'm the pinky, man. We cover most of the hand here. So
sounds like a brand to me.
Most of the hand, yeah. And, anyway, but yeah, and you know, by the way, I just want to mention that this month in the Voice for the Defense magazine, which is the Texas Criminal Defense Lawyers Association magazine, you guys are featured in there with your federal Bureau of Prisons expertise, and that's an esteemed honor. And I know you guys are headed toward the champion in the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers publications and possibly CLE. So, you know, it just shows the credibility that you guys have, and also the fact that you guys have delivered on some clutch cases. Let me kind of share an example. I mean, right out of the box, that was live this morning. The three of us, gave a presentation to the Dallas Bar, and some other people. And one of the attendees isn't kind of a young attorney, real aggressive, does a lot of federal work. That attorney then contacted us about a client that he knew was going to be going to federal prison. Either he was going to plead or he was going to go to trial. more than likely lose, but very, very rarely do you get a trial and win on these type of case. Nonetheless, I had a conversation with the gentleman this morning again for the second time, telling him this is what we could do. This is how we can assist with the writing of the pre-sentence report, making sure the points were as low as possible. And should the sentencing, he hadn't been sentenced yet, should the sentencing be in a certain range, he can qualify for the residential drug abuse treatment program, get 6 months in a halfway house and up to a year off the back of his sentence. And that's very appealing when you hear that. So I had to really kind of tell him about what kind of sentence he needed, right, to get the most out of his time. Intuitively, you'd think, well, I want to just do the least sentence possible. Well, if you're sentenced to, let's say, less than 27 months, well, I wouldn't say that. If you're sentenced to 20 months or less, you're not going to be, more than likely, not going to be able to get the full benefit of the RDAP program. So, and get that full time cut. And just kind of letting him know what we could do, how we would do it, the steps involved, and all the way up to assisting his attorney with language in the judgment commitment order at the end to facilitate the designation as well. So anyway, and so that's kind of a case, Jenny, where, you know, we're luckily involved in the beginning, and it makes that coaching engagement so much further. Oftentimes people, Jenny, will call us in a panic, just like the other gentleman was on this designation to the camp.
Like, oh, yeah, I can imagine.
I'm going to the Allegheny Forest or whatever. Far from right. What can you do to help? And man, we're trying to jump through every orifice of our bodies to try to figure out a solution. And I mean, we did it, but golly gee, wow. If they just would have retained us sooner, then it would have been a lot easier. So, so is this making sense, Jenny? Is that kind of?
Yeah. So how do people find you guys now? Is it like a tight network, kind of word of mouth, or how do you guys get the word out?
Well, I mean, we've done emails and presentations and those things.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I think each person has played a role. Like Jose, what have you done unique to you? You've taken some unique trips, right?
I have, Bruce. We provide coaching and training to all federal judges, all federal chief probation officers.
Oh, yeah.
Federal public defenders, U.S. attorneys, including Criminal Justice Act defense attorneys. So I've been throughout the nation, coast to coast, Guam, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, everywhere there's a federal prison, I've been providing training. Lately, we provided training to the United States Sentencing Commission, two sessions a year. So the first one was in Baltimore, Maryland, for the first half of the country, and the other half of the country was last September in Denver, Colorado. So we've been around everywhere, and it spreads. The voice spreads. Actually, chief judges come to me asking me to bring this training to their districts, and I have traveled the whole country bringing it, and it spreads by voice and by the probation officers spread their word to the others. And but we're also in the website. We're also in the web, and we have a website.
But Jose is kind of like the apostle. Yeah, Jose, like the Apostle Paul, man. You're spreading it.
That's right.
he hasn't done time in the Roman jail yet. I'm like, you know, he's out there spreading, going out there to talk about our services. And because of that, right, Jose, on one of his talks recently resulted in Wyoming and Colorado and us being very instrumental in several cases and many cases to come with the Federal Public Defender's Office. Right, Jose?
Absolutely. That was the result of the U.S. Sentencing Commission coaching last September. Actually, one of the criminal defense attorneys for the Federal Public Defender's Office contacted us and said, hey, I would like for you to help us on this instance. And so we had Wyoming and Colorado helping those, coaching them, engaging at the beginning of the sentencing process, which is the correct time to do it, at the beginning, not at the end stage, because that way we could do many things and coach a lot the attorneys, the defendant's family, and everybody involved in that sense. So that was a very good one, and they're still contacting us, and we're looking forward to continue working with them in the future.
And Ralph, you did some stuff with emailing in Chicago, and you've been doing some stuff too, right?
Yeah, generally email, phone calls, our website, federalprisonauthority.com, and then also we have our Facebook page, Federal Prison Authority.
Right. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. We talk about how coaches market their companies and whatever else, but I think for this type of coaching, I really think our live engagements, I think our live shows, if you will, where we're providing training to judges or attorneys or bar associations or what have you, I think that the two things in this type of business are the live training, but also having a web presence. Now, make no mistake about it, the web presence here is really good. Just the name Federal Prison Authority was very strategic. You know, many of the callers think that they're calling the Federal Bureau of Prisons.
Yes.
I wouldn't think that, and we're not. It was not being, dishonest in any way, but we do get a lot of calls.
Sure.
And we did get a lot of calls from family members, and quite frankly, that has been, you know, some months that's the first place referral, some months it's the second place referral, but we do get a lot of interest from the internet, and it's really interesting. Man, I'm going to make a categorical statement here, but I think that the three of us, not only are disciples, but we're apostles. In other words, I helped write policy statement 5330.10 and 0.11 in psychology services manual. I opened the federal sex offender treatment program in 1989. You know, Jose built, and Ralph, you know what I mean? They were in the beginning of the construction of
all this. You're the innovators. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And so once we left, you know, I'm not going to remark on the quality of the talent that's there now, but certainly, I think I'm going to go on record and say I just don't think there are too many people that have the repository of knowledge that we have collectively. You know what I mean about this? And I think stating a fact here. I'm not even. There's no feeling in that statement. It's just the truth. And so that's what's made this relationship so special and so easy and so effective is that. This kind of trinity of sorts can sit here and take any federal case, take it apart, deconstruct it, and tell anybody onlooker what needs to happen and probably what is going to happen here in the new future with the case. Would you agree with that, Jose and Ralph?
You nailed it, Bruce. You nailed it. There's no consulting firm like ours with the. And I say it with the knowledge, the current knowledge, the procedures and what's going on in the Bureau of Prisons right now.
You are the experts.
Well, and then with prison reform, you know what I mean? There's only going to be so many, for instance, with prison reform. We had a meeting, a little summit here in South Lake, Texas, if Kardashian can say this and they can do that, but at the end of the day, right, are they really going to shut down these federal prison camps? I mean, especially the ones that are on military bases and especially, you can say stuff and it can be passed at the House, but the implementation of these things is a whole nother kettle of fish. So, so there are going to be some interesting things afoot with prison reform. But that's not going to be our in clemency, but I think our main focus is the day-to-day designation and programming and release of inmates.
I agree, Bruce. And look, the Bureau of Prisons is an agency like no other, and it's continuously evolving. is changing. Actually, if you saw a couple of months ago in May, the director of the Bureau of Prisons resigned, left the Bureau of Prisons. And, you know, you have to look at what's happening currently with federal corrections. There's a new administration. This administration has an emphasis on immigration policies, and the Bureau of Prisons is impacted by that. It's getting a little bit tougher on crime. The Bureau of Prisons is impacted by that. So it keeps on evolving. And so there is also a factual, this is facts, that the agency reduces population from a high back in 2012 of over 220,000 inmates to now, current date, 185,000 inmates. So there's been a reduction of the federal population. And so with that comes changes in employment, staffing, working with your resources, and working with the budgetary constraints that the Bureau has. So we know that that's occurring right now because we keep up-to-date knowledge and contact with high officials in the Bureau of Prisons, which were our friends ultimately. And we know what's going on and what they're going through. So we have to stay up front with upfront knowledge, updated knowledge of what's transcurring in the Bureau, so we could know how we could coach our future clients or our current clients.
Well, and I imagine, you know, when you guys talk, Bruce, when you talk about prison reform, you guys are experts on prison and on the, is it federal corrections? I'm sorry, I don't know all the terminology, but yes. I wouldn't even know what reform means, reforming from what. And so you guys are the experts on knowing what reform even means.
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of changes going on right now. The Congress passed, the House passed the Prison Reform Act, which is going to impact the operations of the Federal Bureau of Prisons if it's passed through the Senate also and ultimately goes into law. A lot of things are going to be changing. So actually, we were one of the proponents, me as the chief of the DSEC, is the DSEC, the interpretation of calculation of good conduct time. The law says you get 54 days per year served, but that's not the way it's interpreted by law, established by president, by the U.S. Supreme Court. It's actually 47 days. So we propose that let's go with the actual 54 days as it was intended by Congress, not by interpretation, judicial interpretation.
Right.
And that's coming down the pipe. So if that comes down the pipe, there's going to be a lot of changes in the Bureau. The way we calculate sentences at the DSEC, not we, they. I say we still, think I'm still working. But no, they will change the way sentences are calculated. And it would be a benefit for all those that are incarcerated. There's going to be thousands of releases if that comes through fruition.
Yeah.
Right. So that'll be a flurry of activity. So, yeah, when you have these changes, it affects people going in, but there's a lot of people coming out. I remember they had a reduction. Remember the reduction of the cocaine laws, right?
And the crack cocaine and stuff. Yeah, like that. The crack cocaine in 2008 and 2010.
Right.
There was a lot of inmates that were immediately released. Actually, I had an operation back in 2010 when that law came in effect. It was 24-hour operation. We had to work 12 hours on and 12 off. So I had shifts. And there was, at the end of when everything was said and done, there was over 16,000 inmates that were released that year because of the crack cocaine law changes.
Right. And so that was just a flurry of activity and a near mass exodus of individuals. And so, again, if they start making some implementations with the good conduct time, then that could affect some releases as well. So, there's just I'm trying to think of another instance. We get a lot of family members. Do we want to talk about compassionate release? We want to talk about what we've done. Some wellness checks for family members. We We actually help the family members educate their loved one how to communicate with the BOP, Bureau of Prisons officials, through administrative remedies or through their own email accounts. Ralph, I think you're working on a situation where a gentleman is trying to get the greatest severity thing removed and going back and forth, right, with the unit team and the inmate and the family?
Correct. DSCC inappropriately scored him as the greatest severity offender, but I don't believe that they had all the documents present, and he arrived at the facility, and he should be, he's a sex offender, and he should be classified as high security, which will reduce his points and give him an opportunity to get into a lesser security prison. And I've been working with the prison and the family, and right now we're in the administrative remedy phase, and I haven't heard the outcome, but I'm positive that we will be successful and the inmate will get the benefits that he's got coming to him, yes.
Yeah, I mean, so just that subtle difference can make a lot of difference in where he does his time and all kinds of things in terms of his classification. So,
right, and that's what I mentioned earlier, is how gray this policy is. When it comes to classifying an inmate, there's only two chapters of, you know, of one program statement, and it is very, very gray. So that comes to where the PSR, I wasn't sure if you were going to get to that, why it is so important that it is clear, concise, accurate. It's not vague. Nothing's left open to interpretation, because that PSR, besides being used by the DSCC to initially classify him, every facility this individual goes to, their unit team will also use that document and may have a different interpretation of policy. That's why it's imperative that, so it doesn't negatively impact the inmate during his incarceration, that PSR is cut and dry. There's no questions asked. This is what it is.
Okay, go talk a little bit how important it can be and how crucial it is to have your education, like your high school education, verified. Go ahead and talk about that a little bit.
Well, for example, I'll go to the points. 15 points, you're a low. 16 points, you're a medium. And there's a section in the PSR. It's educational. Verifying an individual's education. A lot of times the probation officer will just go ask the individual, so what do you have? He goes, oh, I graduated in high school. And then the probation officer leaves it at that. It has to be verified by the probation officer that a diploma was received, transcripts were reviewed, but it has to be verified. So since it wasn't verified, he gets 1 point because he doesn't have his GED or high school diploma. So now he's 16 points, and he's going to a medium. If he would have worked with the probation officer, or the probation officer would have done a little more investigation and said that it was verified, he would have been 15 points and going to a low security prison. And there's a big difference between low security prisons and medium security prisons. So just not verifying a high school diploma or GED could result in an individual going to a higher security prison.
So yeah, it can make the difference between living behind a fence and not being in a minimum security camp where there is no fence. And so, you know, that... Yeah, and that's where you, Jose, in particular, not so much me, but are you know, that's just crucial knowledge to have. And it just, I mean, the ramifications on their life and safety is just amazing what that is. Does that make sense at all, Jenny?
It does. It totally does. It's partly the intent, and it's partly interpretation. It's knowing what it's you guys knowing all the details and the history and knowing the strategy. There's so much strategy in this and helping your clients.
Yes, you know, this is Jose, and you're all right on point what you're saying, and it is so crucial that this starts at the beginning of when that PSR is being written, not afterwards, because afterwards it's vetted by the court, and it I've never seen a PSR being changed after it's written, unless it's a draft. But once it's final, it's too late to change it. So that's why it's important to have people that know to coach and assist the defense attorneys, the family, the inmate, the everybody involved, even the judges, even federal judges called me when I was at the DSEC to see how could they order that sentences run concurrent, judicial recommendations, if we were going to comply with them, programs, educational programs, mental health programs, and things like that. They used to call me about cases they were very passionate about, although they were sentencing to hefty terms. So it is crucial that at the beginning stages of before that PSR is written, that we to get us involved so we could assist and help and coach everybody involved.
But actually, it's even better to reach out and to speak with somebody before you even have your interview with the probation office, so we can advise and coach what types of questions are going to be answered. This is what, you know, is going to benefit you the most. You know, they have to be accurate. They can't falsify their answers, but they have to be accurate. But even before the PSR is written, if that case out of Elkton, that case out of that sex offender I was talking about earlier, if we'd have been involved from the beginning, it never would have been an issue. But since that PSR was written, like Jose said, PSRs aren't going to be changed. The inmates have a recourse to reach out to probation and get a letter saying something's inaccurate. But that PSR is as written.
Got it. So you act as a consultant to attorneys and judges and a subject matter expert and then a coach to the incarcerated and their families?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
That is a good synopsis. You know, I mean, it's really interesting, right? Because we can look at this from 360 degrees, because we can actually give judges training, but then the judges are the ones that are making the sentences for these inmates to go in there and do their time. And so it's really interesting how the judges and the attorneys and the public defenders, the defense attorneys and families, so we're all kind of feeding from the same pot of knowledge and information. It's just the utilization of that information. It's amazing how people just can't access or can't quite get their head around the entire picture. Hey, look, and it's a daunting thing. I would hate to be a federal.
You know what I mean?
It's daunting. And so it's interesting because that offender, they go from the judicial branch of government, going through probation, federal probation, getting a pre-sentence report, going to court, getting a sentence. And then once that gavel hits, they're then transferred over to the executive branch of government, where the FBI, DEA, Federal Bureau of Prisons, these are all law enforcement agencies that work for the Attorney General, right? So it's a law enforcement agency, and so there's just, man, you know, then you're dealing with two different and two very powerful sectors of government, and sometimes they try to play well together, but sometimes they don't play well together.
It is daunting from all angles.
You know, it's funny because this knowledge, this consulting and this federal prisons and federal corrections expertise that Bruce and Ralph has and that we have it in our firm, it's universal. It's really universal. It serves the judiciary like it serves the prosecuting attorney, like it serves the defense attorney and the inmate's family. So it's not one-sided. It's a 360 approach to the facts and what the nitty-gritty is.
Yeah.
It is. Well, hey, we got a minute left, folks. That was it. I told you that time would run out just as we were having fun, and it has. So, Ralph, how can interested people get a hold of you and Jose for these crucial services?
They can find us online at federalprisonauthority.com, and also they can reach us via email at federalprisonauthority, BOP, Bureau of Prisons, federalprisonauthority, BOP, @gmail.com. And we also have a Facebook page, Federal Prison Authority.
That's right. And the hotline, I think it says here, 214-431-2032. They can text or call and ask any questions and get routed to the appropriate person. So, fellas, I want to thank you so much for coming on the Concierge Show, Coach's Show here today. And
yes, thank you.
And I know it's kind of complicated and kind of technical, but maybe we'll have these gentlemen come back again here in a few months.
We need a sequel.
Yeah, sequel, and maybe run through some specific cases or female cases. There's all kinds of different things that we've done that they've done as well that we could fill up the whole show. So, fellas, thanks again for coming out today. And, folks, please listen to our show and all the podcasts that are archived on the LA Talk Radio website. And also, we're on iTunes. That's right. If you go to iTunes and type in the Concierge Coaches Show, all our episodes are there for you to download, and they're free. We have paid it forward, so you can listen to our show free anytime at all, 24 hours a day, either on the LA Talk Radio site or on iTunes. And Jenny, how can folks get a hold of you?
People can reach me at jhubconsulting.com, jhubconsulting.com, and on Facebook at jhub consulting.
Awesome, awesome. Well, folks, fellas, thanks for coming out. We'll see y'all again. And everybody, come join us again next week on the Concierge Coaches Show. We may have the youngest certified life coach in the history of the coaching industry with us next week. So stay tuned for that show. And we'll see everybody next week here on LA Talk Radio, Concierge Coaches Show. Take care, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Jenny Hubby, only on LA Talk Radio.